The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Reoccurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, why do Christians need to insist on one God? Why can't there be many gods? My friend, there's nothing wrong with the idea of multiple gods as a concept. It's just that this is not the reality of the situation. If we happen to live in a universe created by many gods, that would have been fine, but we don't. Instead, we exist in a universe brought about by one God. This is the teaching of the Bible. As for reasons to accept the Bible as the Word of God, that, of course, is a separate discussion, one that we've had a lot on this program, but not one that we're going to get in today. Meanwhile, God does work to make himself known, even apart from the Bible, since he understands that many of you just don't read it or believe in it or like it a whole lot. This is why the theme of our radio show is not merely Christianity, but Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Today is a pop culture edition because, among other ways, God does certainly make himself known through the arts. As a matter of fact, that's how he first reached me. I did not believe in the Bible in my early college years, but through novels and plays about the meaning of life and the nature of human beings, God was able to speak to me and draw me to himself. I'm convinced that when people say they're looking for love, joy, peace, or truth, what's going on is they are actually looking for God without realizing it. They're trying to fill an empty vacuum in their lives. They may hate organized religion. They may have grown up in the church, bored to death with the services and long sermons, taking the beliefs for granted and refusing to question them until some college professor explains what nonsense it all is anyway, supposedly. Or they may be understandably disenchanted with the many Christian hypocrites they have met. Despite such handicaps, these very same people are still looking in their own way for the real God. Indeed, one who grows up amongst the religious may be farther from God than the most cynical of atheists. Well, film critic Mark Boobian is no stranger to our program and no stranger to the idea of God speaking through the arts. Mark, welcome back to our show.
Thanks for having me, Bob. It's great to be here. You probably know, 2010 just wrapped up, and that wraps up the first decade of the new millennium. And a lot of lists are talking about the last year only. Nobody is really talking about the last 10 years in movies.
Well, probably because of Academy Awards time, they're kind of stuck in last year
mentality. Right,
and
that's sort of the traditional thing to do. But I also think people don't necessarily recognize that the 00 is the end of the decade rather than the beginning.
Oh, no, everybody thought the millennium started in 2000, and we had to explain, no, that's 2000.
Right, but I was one of those people that thought that. So 10 years ago, that's when I learned that the 00 was the end, not the beginning.
I heard Peter Jennings explain that years ago.
Oh, really?
When he was telling us that 1970 was not the beginning of a new decade. He said, it's very easy. When they first started counting years, they had to start somewhere. So they started with
at one,
which meant the end of the first decade right. was 10.
It actually makes sense, doesn't it?
It makes a lot of sense. It's amazing.
So since we just had a really bad year in film, it's a little more fun to talk about the last 10 years.
So you're going to mercifully forget some of the films that are nominated?
That's right.
Is anything nominated that you think deserved it?
Yes, there's Inception is nominated.
That was
Toy Story 3 is nominated.
Movie. Yeah.
Now, I haven't seen about 80% of the movies, because they've got 10 of them nominated.
Just to get more people to watch the Academy Awards that fail. Are you going to come back and do an Academy Awards show?
Of course, Bob.
Okay, so you're going to, you got your homework. You got to watch them.
Yeah,
I'll better watch a watch few of them movie. Myself. I saw True Grit.
Oh, you did,
and I never saw the original True Grit.
Oh, so okay, you spared yourself.
And then the other night they showed the original on TV, so I thought it'd be fun to watch it. It was almost scene for scene and line for line the same. So after a while, I turned it off. I said, "I just saw this." So.
Except that it had Glenn Campbell in it. The original
not bad as a singer, but as an actor, it was a little different.
He was only in that movie. I wonder why.
Well, you know, he sang the song from that movie, and that song was nominated for Best Song of the Year, but it lost out to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Oh. Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head.
Right. Okay. Well, they deserve
it. Which was kind of a lame song, but it was in a good movie.
Yeah, it was a good movie. It was a
great movie, lame song,
but
the song
won. It didn't fit the film at all. Yeah.
It did not fit. It didn't sound Western. It did not. But that was that's what films were like in the 60s.
Yeah.
Uneven, cutting edge.
Now they put the song at the in the credits, so you have the unrelated song, but it's at least it's shoved at the end instead of trying to kind of throw it into the middle somewhere.
And with animation, you have it sung as a musical in the movie, and then you have
Elton John or somebody
else do the version that they want to become their merchandising hit on the radio during the credits.
Yeah, exactly. Well, fortunately, I like it. Even though I don't necessarily like that aspect of film, it's better that they're doing it that way than trying to put it into the film and force it. Unless it actually was a musical and was meant to fit the film.
Yeah, if they're trying to fit it in just to get nominated for an award, that's another story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, musicals aren't that popular anymore.
Well, and
though,
that's a dated category.
Yes,
that category existed because so many were the great classic MGM musicals. But then when musicals stopped being made, for the most part, they just kept the category.
Right.
So it took on a life of its own.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and they want to sell records. That has a lot to do with it, too. So, well, now in the last 10 years, though, even though musicals are not that popular, there's been a lot of big milestones in film just in the last decade. So I actually think it's probably the best single decade I've seen in my life of watching film.
Even better
big
than
milestones.
The classic 1930s, Gone with the Wind, Wizard of Oz.
When I was watching movies in the 30s, I didn't think those were as good as the 2000s. That's right. So, for example, like the Academy Awards, a big milestone in the last 10 years was that The Lord of the Rings tied for the most Oscars, 11 Oscars. It tied with Ben-Hur and
Titanic,
the horrible Titanic, the good Ben-Hur, and the good Lord of the Rings. It was the Return of the King that scored all of those
Oscars.
And
they were probably
Oscars.
Really honoring all three of the movies by doing that, I would
think. I like that theory. That was your theory, Bob, and I think that's actually a very good way to look at it.
Well, because by itself, it's not really a whole movie.
It was all three, right? And the books were not three books. It was really one story the same way. So, I appreciate that is a good way to look at it. Just as significant as the Academy Awards in the last 10 years, Star Wars. We had the prequels wrap up with Revenge of the Sith. And that's one of the best Star Wars movies ever made.
He was kind of striking out with his first two.
Yeah,
prequels.
People didn't like
them. I didn't hate them as much as most people did, but I certainly didn't think they were as good as the original.
No,
well,
they
actually, I don't know. Really didn't like those Ewoks. They might have been better than the Ewok one.
Yeah, that's episode six. Yeah, I mean, Return of the Jedi just wasn't that great of a movie, but Revenge of the Sith was almost the movie that Return of the Jedi
should
have been.
We hoped it would be. We hoped Luke would go through serious temptation with the dark side of the Force, and he never really did in the third movie.
Yeah,
but we saw Anakin go through it instead, so we got a little bit of payback.
And I think the other thing that was really good about Revenge of the Sith, I always get confused with the numbers, 3, 6, whatever, so... let's just stick with the title. The Revenge of the Sith is that it's Lucas's best directorial film ever. There's one moment in the film where it's just an absolutely beautiful scene where Anakin and Padme are kind of separated by a great distance, but are kind of peering. They feel the tension and the pain of each other over that distance, and they're looking out the windows, and Lucas keeps going back and forth between them. There's not a single line of dialogue in this scene. But
well, that's good, because the dialogue between Anakin and Padme in the movie before right. I truly, deeply love you.
Yeah.
Just not including that went 100% toward a better movie.
Right. And not including any at all. Well, anyway. It still is a great movie. Fortunately, that line is not in The Revenge of the Sith either. So the movie really stands on its own as one of the great films of the last decade. It was quite an improvement.
In fact, we were talking about Michael Medved before the show. Michael Medved could not stand the performance of Anakin Skywalker in movie 2, but thought he did a superb job.
Yeah.
In movie three.
I kind of agree, because I could actually see why they hired Hayden Christensen to be Anakin in one scene where he finds his mother dead, when he discovers her body or when she dies in his arms. You can see him switch from the joy, the sadness, to the absolute rage. And that is, I mean, he carried that into the next film. Well,
the lines were so bad. Even Natalie Portman, who's a good actress, couldn't save them. And so I'm not sure he was such a bad actor.
Or was the real problem that
Lucas should have hired Lawrence Kasdan again to write the screenplay.
Right. Well, we know that that's actually the case. He should have. There's no question. But, you know, I still like the prequels, but it's just that Revenge of the Sith really stood out and above, head and shoulders above the other ones.
So I take it these prequels are in your top 10 of the last decade, or are they?
Just the Revenge of the Sith. I mean, since I want to cover Christian-themed films from the last decade, I'm just sort of giving an overview of why the last decade was so good right now, but I do want to get into the Christian films that were really good and talk about those, because there were a lot of really good Christian films.
And now, again, just for the audience that may not have heard these review shows before, when we say Christian films, we don't necessarily mean a film put out by Billy Graham Productions.
Right.
It may be somebody who has something about God or human nature in the film, and the director himself may not even have thought of it as a Christian film, but it might still be something God uses. So we're kind of broadening our understanding of what we mean.
I usually do that. Today, I'm kind of...
Today, you want to go with the director actually intending it that way?
We'll see. I have kind of a mix, so we'll see. So let me cover the little bit more about the last decade to say why it's so good, and then we'll get into the Christian stuff. Like, for another example of one of the important things about this last decade, it was very controversial. We had Brokeback Mountain, which turned the cowboy stereotype on its ear and brought in one of the first major motion pictures that had a wide release that had a gay sex scene. That is very controversial, and it was. Fahrenheit 9/11, highest grossing documentary ever, espoused this very strong anti-Bush conspiracy theory about 9/11.
It was also great, very controversial. Fiction. Unfortunately, they were calling it nonfiction.
Passion of the Christ also ignited passions on both sides of the fence.
No kidding.
The one thing I liked about it was, for once, the Christians were attending the movie, and the press was condemning the movie and the depiction of Christ and calling for its censorship.
It's usually the reverse. The Christians are out there trying to censor.
So it's quite refreshing to be on the, hey, I'm in the movie, watching the movie. I'm not outside. I don't have to be outside protesting. The press is doing that for me.
Okay, we'll continue with some of the best movies with Christian themes in the last 10 years with film critic Mark Boobian. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show with film critic Mark Boobian.
Thanks again, Bob. You know, I was thinking that I could probably do a whole show just on why the last 10 years were good without ever mentioning Christianity. So let me just kind of cut it off here with the box office being one of the other reasons, the final reason that the last 10 years were so imperative to film and made it the best decade.
And our bad economy certainly didn't hurt Hollywood.
No, it didn't. It didn't really. I mean, maybe this last year, but I think bad movies had more to do with it.
I think that
was
somewhat true during the Depression, too. We still had a lot of great films and many films come out of Hollywood during that time.
Even though I pretended to remember being alive back then, I don't. So, sorry about that, Bob. I can't comment on the Depression. I wasn't around back then.
Well, I happen to know you saw some of the films from that era, though, because I went with you to the theater. Not in those days. Like we saw Gone with the Wind together.
That's
right. It was a re-release.
Yeah.
Okay. Neither of us was alive.
No, that's true. Back then. Yeah. Okay. You got me there. Actually, Gone with the Wind is the highest grossing movie ever made when adjusted for inflation.
Yeah.
Because everybody keeps going back to see it. Avatar, obviously, being the highest grossing movie now as of last year. Highest grossing, not adjusted. That's one of the milestones for the last 10 years in terms of box office. Dark Knight took the number three spot behind Titanic.
Excellent movie.
And then six of the 10 highest grossing movies ever made now are all from the last 10 years. So it was a big, very important.
Six of the highest grossing movies ever made, even with the not with the adjustment.
No, because Gone with the Wind just trashes everybody. Right. So nobody can catch up. Star Wars is actually on that list. I think Star Wars is number two adjusted for inflation.
The original Star Wars?
Yeah, the original, because it had the two re-releases, and then they, the 70s, you know, they adjust that money for inflation. So it helps them out a lot. So for in terms of Christian films, though, this was also a big decade for Christian films, for Christian-themed films, Christian-made films. I kind of got to categorize it a couple of different ways. There's what I call Christian productions, and I'll just go through the list real quick, and then we'll talk about some of the movies when we get to them. Christian productions, for example, Fireproof, specifically a Christian-made film for Christians, marketed entirely in churches, never saw an ad on TV for the film.
I'm trying to remember if I saw that or not.
Yeah,
refresh me briefly.
Have.
Was that the one about a marriage?
Yeah, and a fire. And I'm the one that didn't see it. I have to have it on the list, though, because it was an important film.
You know, it was. I didn't think the acting was all that good, but I did think it was a good movie overall.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I can't comment. I didn't see it. But, you know, it was still an important film in terms of its contribution to Christianity in the arts in the last 10 years. VeggieTales, another VeggieTales, a very famous Christian.
They are made by Christians.
Yes, again, they're a Christian production. Very good quality. You know, I didn't see Fireproof because I didn't expect good quality. I, of course, go see VeggieTales expecting something good, and they delivered in spades this time around with The Pirates Who Don't Do Anything, the movie. Passion of the Christ, also what I would consider a Christian production, Mel Gibson being a Christian and this movie being marketed. It was the first film really marketed in churches. It also had a mass market release as well where they marketed it.
It's a shame he had such a meltdown afterwards, because he was given unfair criticism for that movie. But now because of his meltdown, it's giving false ammunition, but ammunition to his critics.
But, you know, that can happen to anybody. Look at Tom Cruise. I mean, Tom Cruise got destroyed when he got on Oprah's show and stood on the couch and talked about his girlfriend at the time. And, I mean, anybody can get character assassinated in Hollywood. That's the way Hollywood works. And, I mean, Mel Gibson did some bad, terrible things. I'm not trying to justify those things. But
that doesn't mean he didn't make great movies.
Exactly. I love Tom Cruise's movies. It's just, they're people. They're human beings. Come on. I mean, the movie can still be good, and the human being.
Now, you can't
do the
be counting
things.
Top Gun when you say you
no,
love
I'm
Tom
not.
Cruise. Thank you. You and I might be the only people in the country that didn't think that was such a great movie.
Yeah, my review of that movie: Planes for the Guys, Hot Guys for the Girls. How can they go wrong with this movie?
It was just so predictable. I knew his friend was going to die.
Yeah,
blah
right.
blah blah. But now he went. Some of the other things that he did later. What?
He's really. I mean, Minority
Rain
Report.
Man,
I think is a great
a few
movie.
Good
Rain
Men.
Man.
Yeah, he's done some good stuff.
Yeah, so I really like him as an actor. Another category for Christian film would be what I call is an emerging art form. I think in the last 10 years. Is what I call Christian myth. Now, I'm putting The Lord of the Rings right on the top of the list because that was a Christian myth. Tolkien wrote it with that in mind. He's sort of trying to create a new mythology with Christianity incorporated thematically.
Now, has he admitted to that? I know he was a Christian.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. You know, I was looking through my notes.
I had heard somewhere that he denied that he deliberately intended to make it that way, and that maybe just...
He denied that it was an allegory.
Beliefs. Yeah.
Okay, so that's important.
But because of his worldview and good and evil, it's hard not to find that whether he intended it or not.
Well, we have to make sure that we are on Tolkien's page when we talk about allegory, because he's a professor. He meant something very specific. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, also on the list of Christian myth here, is an allegory. It's a retelling of another story in a different form. So Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe is the retelling of Christ's death and resurrection and salvation through this character Aslan, this lion. It is an allegory. Tolkien did say, and I do know he said this, he despises allegory, quote unquote, despises allegory. So that's what he was saying he was not doing with The Lord of the Rings.
But still, if a Christian is writing about good and evil, then obviously some of his beliefs are going to irk through.
Right, but that's not what he, I think, specifically did want to incorporate Christianity into the thematic elements of The Lord of the Rings in order to sort of drive it and give Christianity sort of a voice in mythology rather than like Greek mythology, obviously not Christian-based per se, but per se, not Christian-based at all, period. It has the multiple gods and all that. He was sort of redoing this new mythology with the Christ-centered view that he had.
And it was interesting because they really didn't talk about God per se, a lot about human nature. Sauron, certainly, if he wasn't Satan, he's at least Satan's close cousin.
Right. But, I mean, he's the incarnation of evil at that point.
They didn't actually talk about a single supreme being that I can recall anywhere in the movie or the books.
No, not in The Lord of the Rings, but his mythology, which he builds in the
Oh, like what he put Silmarillion. In the Silmarillion? Would he have had it there?
It actually begins with sort of the Genesis account of the Middle Earth. Mm-hmm. And it does have this one god, and then below God, there's this other set of beings, and below them, there's yet another tier of beings, and Gandalf is one of those, and then there's the men, elves, and dwarves that get created in the story of all of that. So the Silmarillion is really sort of the Bible of the Lord of the Rings in a way. But yeah, so he did definitely incorporate a lot of Christianity into his work. And I already mentioned The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, a really good movie that came out in the last 10 years. The Secret of Kells, a good animated film.
You had a lot of glowing praise for that on.
And I still do. I just absolutely can't get over how good that movie is. The Book of Eli, which is sort of my inspiration for this category.
That was a wonderful
movie. In the last 10 years. Yeah, it was absolutely great. It really builds.
Although it had
mythology.
A little bit of an obligatory, we need to preserve the Bible and other holy books like the Quran at the end. I kind of wish they hadn't thrown that in.
And that's a bummer that they did because the movie didn't really have anything to do with that. It's very clear throughout that movie that this is a movie about a guy who has met God. I mean, God spoke to him and told him to do something, and he's doing it. And it is the Christian God that told him to do it.
It almost makes you wonder if the producer threw that in at the end and that the writer himself might not have done that.
I don't think that he did. I think they were just being politically correct. They wanted to recognize all faiths. And, you know, the Jewish Talmud is there on the shelf as well as the Quran. And I think there's a couple of, there's the Bhagavad Gita there. So they really wanted to be open and recognize that. But I really don't think that was specifically part of the story. The story really, really feels like it is a Christian myth, specifically.
It would be interesting to do some research and find that out. I'm here with film critic Mark Booby, and you are listening to The Bob Siegel Show, Christian themes in movies, and more specifically, some of the better ones in the last 10 years. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with film critic Mark Boobian discussing some of the best movies in the last 10 years, particularly with Christian themes.
Thanks, Bob. Now, the thing I like about the Book of Eli, as I mentioned, is that it really is specifically Christian, but It's a really obvious sort of, it's almost like it's a new genre. Like I had mentioned about the Lord of the Rings being a Christian myth, the Book of Eli is taking it a step further where Christianity is very obviously in the forefront of the film, where the main character has this experience with God. God speaks to him, tells him to save the last existing Bible and take it somewhere. And he's on this journey for the last 30 years to get it there, and he's walking with God, and he is his life is miraculously preserved throughout the movie, and we see that specifically occur. He's shot. He would have been killed for sure, but he still lives. He's blind. I mean, right? That's a spoiler. Sorry about
beating
that.
Beating the snot out of everybody.
Right. He's blind, and he miraculously brings the Bible to its destination as God called him to do, and he lives until he completes his task, and then he expires. So this is really, you know, like I said, it's very much in the forefront Christianity, the notion that God is a real God. This book, Christian Bible, is a real thing that needs to be preserved, and it is miraculously preserved. So again, this is sort of it's a new story. It's not a, you know, it's not an old story being written. It's a new story with Christianity integrated and incorporated into it in the forefront. So that's what I'm calling a Christian myth in that sense. Now, another thing this is not a movie per se, it's a TV show, but I can't go on without recognizing because it was so important. Also a Christian myth is Lost, the TV show Lost.
Now, do you think they intended that to be Christian?
Absolutely. They had to.
I heard that the producer, J.J. Abrams, is actually an atheist.
It's very possible, but there's a lot of writers, and there's, just because it's made by an atheist doesn't mean that Christianity is not going to make its way into a film. I mentioned,
they may still think it's good story matter.
Or that the writers are actually Christians potentially incorporating it, or just they want it to be part of the story of Lost.
Well, Robert Bolt wrote the play A Man for All Seasons and put a little forward at the beginning saying that he was an agnostic, but he still had a great admiration for Sir Thomas More because he liked seeing somebody who could stand by his values and know what he believes.
And Sir Thomas More being martyred for his beliefs,
yes, exactly.
Specifically because he wouldn't back down on those. And the Wachowski brothers, those are the guys that made The Matrix. I really don't think they are Christians. I have no idea, but The Matrix, very strong. That's an allegory also.
And some of the best Christian allegory that I've ever seen in terms of what is the real world or what are we calling the real
exactly.
world.
Exactly. It's a postmodernist sort of, you know, it fits in the postmodernist world very well.
And it speaks to, like we were saying on the top of the show, it speaks to people who are not going to pick up a Bible.
Right,
they could maybe get reached in a different way.
Yeah, but and it's a good, now The Matrix doesn't fit in my last 10 years list, but still it's a good movie where the example of the directors, the writers not necessarily being Christian, but using Christianity very well to tell this story. And who knows what their motivation is. They don't do special features. They don't do commentaries or anything like that.
Oh, so that's interesting. They no like director's commentaries.
Yeah, they like the movies to speak for themselves.
Oh, that's interesting.
Instead of going,
I thought this scene worked out real, real well.
Right. This
was such a touching, moving scene.
Yeah, they avoid the pitfall of explaining why the scene is good to them. Yeah, so, but the disadvantage is we don't know what their motivation is. But, you know, that I like that more because it remains a mystery. And Lost is one of those shows that is a mystery. Why did they incorporate Christianity so deeply into it? But, I mean, it has tons and tons of things. I mean, we could almost do a whole show on Lost.
We could almost do
two whole shows on Lost.
And if you'd like to hear those two shows that we almost did them last year, and they're still archived on my website.
Yes, there you go. Okay, so I don't have to actually retell the whole thing because there's a lot there. And
absolutely the best. If we're talking about drama, the best television series ever made.
Yes,
Lost.
I agree. And it had Paul just
gave us a nod. We got some tech guys that like Lost
all
here
right.
too.
So we got some fans out there. That's great. So, you know, and people were talking about Lost all of the time for I guess it was 6 years
they're
that it
was on.
They're
still talking about it, trying to figure out what the heck happened.
Which, again, I like because they're not giving you the answers,
It was like the genius of 2001. Leave it up to the audience to
put think, you know. And I think that also gives the audience the benefit of the doubt that they're intelligent enough to figure stuff out for their own. Like, again, why I like the Wachowskis not telling us what they were doing with The Matrix. Let us figure it out. Let us
Well, it's like when they preview a movie, they tell you the whole story because they think we're so stupid that if we don't see the story ahead of time, we can't know whether we're going to want to go see the movie.
Right. But Lost obviously proves them wrong. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons it was so great. And it definitely deserves a place on this list, even though it was not, like I said, it was not a movie. It was still, it was probably one of the most successful shows.
It was better than a lot of movies, so it certainly does deserve to be on the list.
It does. So, yeah, a very imperative Christian moment in the last 10 years, this show. Something that I kind of want to talk about is not on the list, but why it's not on the list is important. Now, I mentioned The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe already. That was a movie deserving of being on the best of the last 10 years in terms of Christianity because they did such a good job of being honest to the book and they unflinchingly recreated the death and resurrection of Aslan. And there's, you can't say, I mean, it's really difficult to go into this movie and even if you have any inkling of Christianity, you'd really walk away going, wow, they redid the death and resurrection of Christ there. That's what this is about. So, it was very obvious, and
so your
they didn't shy
for
away
not
from that
wanting
at all.
To include it.
No,
in the
I
best
do
is,
want to include it, but the but other movie I don't want to include, I'm taking out of the last 10 years, is the sequel, Prince Caspian.
Oh, okay, so you would put Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe on the list.
Yes, but I would take Prince Caspian
okay,
off
the
list.
Were, yeah.
For the same sort of reason that what they did with Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, everything they did right in that movie, they did wrong in Prince Caspian. Prince Caspian
wasn't
was,
true to the book.
No, it wasn't. It was watered down. I mean, I don't care if it's true to the book so much as if it's true to the theme of the book, and they weren't true to the theme of the book, and in the worst possible way. Now, Hollywood has always had trouble. Always. I go to movies all the time, and whenever I hear the word faith mentioned, it's inevitably about blind faith. With very few exceptions. It's about, oh, this person believes for no particular reason and they just are following because they were raised that way or they blindly believe. It's blind faith. And that's really the tack that they took with Prince Caspian. Prince Caspian is a book about faith, about having faith when everything tells you to doubt, trusting in God, trusting in the evidence of God's existence placed before you. Our main character, Lucy, in this book, she is told by her friends that are that know Aslan. Aslan isn't here. He's not here. Throughout the book, she's seen him, but they don't believe her, and they are trying to convince her that she's wrong, and it's a test of her faith.
Now, didn't they have a little of that in the movie?
They have a tiny bit, but it just becomes like Aslan just shows up, and
they didn't
you just have to believe, Lucy. You just had to believe. That's all I asked of you, just to believe. And it just ends blind faith. No, that's not what Aslan asked in the book. Aslan said, you saw me. I was here. You touched me. You experienced me. This is the faith I asked
for.
Yeah,
because it's very important for people to understand in the Bible, when they use the word faith, they mean obeying God. They don't mean blindly following some being who may or may not exist. They mean that sometimes this God who has proven himself to you that he exists may ask you to do things that are difficult for you to do, and that's the faith. We'll be right back with film critic Mark Boubian.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. Bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to our program. We're having fun talking about talking about a subject that the two of us like very much, movies. Mark and I have had the joy of having a movie night, which has been kind of our own Dead Poet Society, watching movies, celebrating movies, arguing about movies, and now we get to do it on the air and have other people listen in. It's kind of, we get kind of a kick out of
it. Yeah, it's great fun. A lot of fun. Everybody likes movies, I think. It's the great new art form of our generation.
There's probably a few Southern Baptists out there somewhere that not only don't like movies, right, but have never been to one, for crying out loud.
Right, there's always holdouts. It's the everyone with the quotes around it. So yeah,
you should make a movie about the evil of movies and see if you can get a few Southern Baptists to go to it.
Right. That might actually work. Kind of one of those ironic things. It would be this great paradox. I think the universe would crack
open. It would be one of those paradoxes, like if God can make a rock so big that even he can't push it.
Exactly. Can you make a movie about movies being evil and get people that don't want
to
see
movies?
Yes. Yeah, boy, oh boy.
Philosophical implications are tremendous.
Now I'm going to be like spinning all day long thinking about this. Oh my gosh. So, even though we've been talking about how bad the depiction of faith was in Prince Caspian, there have been some good movies that really depict faith correctly. I think the biblical definition, the biblical example of faith, the come, follow me, learn for yourself, discover me type of faith. Nacho Libre was a movie. First, Jack Black, he's going to be a winner in my
book. And here's
where
Mark and I part company. I actually do like Jack Black. I think he's hilarious. I couldn't stand Nacho Libre.
Oh, gosh, Bob.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it's such a good movie. It hurts.
All right. Well, yes, you're entitled to your opinion.
I'm going to make sure we watch it at our next movie night when you don't have
make
any
sure
detail.
You tell me ahead of time, because I think I'm doing my hair that night.
We always have movies that we don't necessarily agree on once
fun.
In a while.
Gotta have a few that we don't agree
yeah.
on.
Yeah. But I like the movie because I really, because I like Jack Black. That's why I saw it. And it was hilarious. It's a very funny movie. The man that made it is actually a Mormon, but it wasn't specifically, a Mormon movie. He didn't make it for the Mormons. It's a mainstream film. And it was marketed to the mainstream. Nickelodeon Films did it. So it is a mainstream, it's a standard movie. But it still had this Christian theme. Jack Black plays an orphan adopted by a group of monks in Mexico. And he grows up and he's going to become a monk. He's made the vows and everything. But he's learning to have faith. He's learning what faith is throughout the film and how to give himself over to God's will, not my will, but yours. And that is what the struggle, that's really the conflict of the film thematically. And it's not until he really makes this prayer at the end of the, near the end of the movie, and his clothes catch on fire and he's revealed to be this secret closet wrestler. And that's when, after this prayer is when you see God's will starting to come to fruition in his life. So it's a really wonderful film in terms of being a Christian movie. Christian very much in the forefront of this film.
Well, if God can use this thing, I guess all the power to him. And I guess
he
I can't
will.
Complain.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe not for you, but
it's just a testimony to the remarkableness of God that he could use even Nacho Libre.
Right. You don't have to like it though, Bob, because you're already a Christian. So it doesn't matter. You can hate the movie all you want. Just make sure that you don't talk bad
about my
Jack
Black. I'd
hate
for some poor soul to stand before God on Judgment Day, said he didn't have a chance to hear, and God goes, what are you talking about? There was Jack Black and Nacho
Nacho Libre.
How blind are you?
Yeah, I have it right here that you saw Nacho Libre, Buster. Uh-huh. Getting away from that. Okay, another movie along these lines. Very popular film last year. Even garnered an Academy Award for the actress, Sandra Bullock. The Blind Side.
Oh, that was a wonderful, wonderful
very appealing film. Now
I liked that even better than Nacho Libre.
Yeah, it sounds like you did. You actually used the word wonderful. I heard it there. So, yeah. What's interesting about this film is that Hollywood really shies away from having Christian characters unless they can make them look dumb. I mean,
but they didn't make it the Christians look
exactly.
Dumb. Well, they were able to make the Christian school look dumb with Sandra Bullock being the one that was truly behaving like a Christian. So maybe that's how it got through.
I'm not sure. And you know what? The Christian, I just watched it.
And the school did come. They did come around though.
Yeah, but they didn't even look that bad. I watched it just recently, and it's only a brief scene in the beginning of the movie where the coach tells them that they're being hypocrites. He says, we have these values, but we're not living by them. And unless we let this boy into the school, we may as well take the plaque down and take the cross off. And
it's a good testimony to the world to see Christians critiquing themselves too. I like that kind of movie.
And exactly. And I think that has a lot to do with why the movie was appealing, because it really confronted the hypocrisy of these people right up front. You saw that Christians can be hypocrites, but that not all of them are, that there's this real Christian love that exists as well. So you saw this, the hypocrisy confronted, then you saw what Christian love was all about. Somebody living by their faith, living by the call of Christ.
And that's very important, because far too often people use Christian hypocrisy as an excuse to not give their lives to Christ. And this shows that, okay, Jesus would agree with your view of hypocrisy, but he would not agree that that's a reason not to become a Christian, because there is a real God.
Right, exactly.
And there are real Christians.
Yeah, and Jesus was down on the hypocrisy of the religious leaders of the time, absolutely. So, and another thing that I liked about the movie is you don't see the Christians standing there listing out all of the sins that you're, you know, that we have to stay away from, you know, then that's the typical thing you Christians tend to do anyway, whether it's in movies or not. And it's just about a Christian family who lives and loves like God in a sinful world. They don't judge, they don't condemn, they just love. And boy, what a refreshing sight. I don't think anybody would turn away from that.
Yeah, and even more amazing that Hollywood let a movie with a positive portrayal of a Christian go through. The woman was also Republican and a
right.
conservative and a hunter. She reminded you of Sarah Palin, but nobody was making that connection, or it would never have gotten nominated for an Academy Award.
Yeah, right. So, boy, it was a good, I mean, I'm just a really appealing film, and it did extremely well in terms of the box office, which is very important for Hollywood. I mean, they're in the business of making money, made more than $100 million, double, three times its budget. Very, very successful film. So hopefully we'll see other movies like it down the line, because something like that that makes a lot of money, Hollywood will try and copy the theme, or they'll try and copy the movie and do it again some other time. So hopefully we'll see something else good like The Blind Side. Usually when Hollywood copies themselves, they don't do a good job. That's the only drawback. Signs is another great movie. Now,
That was a fantastic picture.
Yeah, and now M. Night Shyamalan, I have no idea if the man is a Christian, but I am absolutely sure he is, just because of his films. And
so you have no idea, but you're absolutely sure.
Well, I mean, you know, I guess I contradicted myself
in the
there,
figure of speech moves, kind of
yes.
way.
I mean, I don't know, because I've never heard him say, I've never listened to
You would
to
be
any
surprised
interviews.
To hear that he's not a Christian.
Right. If he said he wasn't, I'd be surprised. Exactly. That's the way I should have phrased it. So that's why I have you on my show, Bob. Thank you.
I got to earn my keep somehow around here.
So, yeah, but I love M. Night Shyamalan's movies. And he, you know, it's a bummer.
Just that we never know how they're going to end, which Hollywood used to do. He's brought back the long-forgotten art of not giving the ending away
and
in the first scene.
Since the preview show everything but the end, thank goodness M. Night's around
and
show us surprises.
I actually think that of all his movies, and I've liked most of them, not all of them, but I have liked most of them. I think Signs was his best job, really.
I think he really did a great job with that movie. Yeah, it is. That's one of my favorites of his. I'm not sure if it's the top, but I'd have to go through in my head and
okay, back for one more segment with Mark Boobian. Join us. To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. The This music from Hang 'Em High is reminding me that at our last movie night, we watched Fistful of Dollars, which I liked, but I said, we should have watched my favorite, which was High Plains Drifter, and then they showed that on TV.
Oh, they did.
Of course, I have it on DVD, but I'm still such a product of the 60s. I get excited when something's on TV with commercials when I shouldn't. What a lame way to watch a movie, but there's still something about, oh, they're showing High Plains Drifter.
Right.
I don't have to walk over to my shelf and take it out of the box and put it on the DVD. I can just watch it.
During the commercial, even, you could get up and put it.
I know. No kidding. But it's funny how we're still conditioned.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Growing up that way when our favorite movie was on television.
Right. I'll watch a show come on and it looks terrible. I've got the Blu-ray on the shelf that looks awesome, sounds great. No commercials, and I'll still sit there.
But you're sitting in your chair, and you got your soda, and you got your chips, and you're all set, and you don't want to get up.
Yeah, but who wants to interrupt a good movie, too? So there you go. I guess that's the way of things. Now, some more Christian, a Christian. Now, like I said, I don't know if M. Night is a Christian, though I would not. I'm pretty sure he might be very. The director of Bruce Almighty and Evan Almighty is a Christian, or at least in an interview stated that he was when he was being interviewed by HollywoodJesus.com about Bruce Almighty.
You know what? I think those movies are okay movies. I don't think they're great movies, but I must say this. If Morgan Freeman, with those piercing eyes, was looking to me for a confession, I'd get down on my face and confess every sin I ever had. If anyone qualifies to be God, it's him.
He was really good. In
he was a little more believable than God, even than George Burns was in Oh God.
Right. Much more believable, actually, I think. He was very, very good. Well, George Burns was a little too dry to be God, well, I think.
The dry, humorous side of God.
Yeah. So, but yeah, these movies specifically, I mean, the guy's a Christian. He makes these movies. They're both good movies about our relationship with God, about faith. Now, this is, though, an example of Hollywood copying itself, copying the template and not getting it right, unfortunately. Bruce Almighty did very well, so they greenlit Evan Almighty. Evan Almighty was the most expensive comedy ever made up to that time, and
really?
Got it tanked.
It was a remake of The Santa Claus. I mean, Steve Carell was becoming Noah against his will and growing the beard,
yeah,
just
I guess
like
you're
Tim
right.
Allen
Good
was
point.
Becoming Santa Claus.
Yeah, maybe it was
will.
Inspired by that, but yeah. But I mean, you know, it's a really still, I liked Evan Almighty a lot better than Bruce Almighty because I like Steve Carell better than Jim Carrey.
You mean you like Jim Carrey better than Steve Carell?
No, I like, did I say it
you
right?
You just Bruce, said you like Bruce yeah. Almighty better than Evan.
Yeah, boy, imagine confusing those two titles. Oh, right. I liked Evan Almighty, Steve Carell, better than the other guy in the other movie. How's that sound?
Is
that
now you're saying you liked Evan Almighty
better. I liked Evan Almighty better, even though it was the more expensive
okay,
and tanked movie.
I thought you first said you liked Bruce Almighty.
Yeah, I did because I confused the two titles.
Okay, so you did say that. So I'm not going crazy.
No, you're not. I'm the one going crazy.
I liked Evan Almighty better too, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
Although it was kind of a ripoff of The Santa Claus, but I still enjoyed it. I enjoyed the story a little more than Bruce Almighty. But
right. And again, the character of Evan, to make sure I've got this right, is more, to me, he's just more appealing of
a little
a person.
More likable.
Yeah, and that's, I think, why the movie was better for me. But, it, you know, they took a template, they tried to copy the success of the previous film, and it didn't work out very well. And that's one of the reasons maybe a little red light goes off when I think about them trying to copy The Blind Side, for example, and reproducing the success of that movie. They might not do such a good job. But, you know, look at all this list of movies. I've got, this isn't even a tenth of what I could talk about in terms of Christianity in film in the last 10 years. These are the most obvious examples I can give. And there are so many great movies out there that have Christianity integrated into the theme, the characters. There's just so many wonderful movies with Christian theme and Christian elements that it's like a treasure trove in the last 10 years. So even though Evan Almighty didn't do very well and isn't going to get a sequel again, there's a lot that we can go to get messages and themes and ideas about Christianity from film. So it's not like the well is empty by any means. Another director, again, another guy, and I got to say this right, who I don't know if he's a Christian, but I would not be surprised if he is. I would bet money that he is, because his movies come out with a very strong Christian theme, is a guy named Alex Proyas. His first
I thought you were going to say Tyler Perry.
Tyler Perry. Oh, gosh. I forgot to put Tyler Perry on the list. Oh, man. I'm glad
we
you brought
know,
that
we
up.
We know he's a Christian.
Yeah, he's for sure. Right.
He's pretty obvious.
I love his movies.
I do, too.
I get hassled to death about it, but I love Madea.
They are terrific films.
Yeah, they're great. Funny movies.
So I said
movies.
Terrific that time because I said wonderful before. Yeah. I didn't want to use the same word.
Right. Okay, so you're going with the synonyms. Pulled out the thesaurus right in time.
There we go.
But yes, okay, so I'll talk about Tyler Perry because he definitely deserves a place on the list, right? Like you said, we know he's a Christian. He's making Christian films for anybody. They're very appealing movies. They do very well. For example, last year, I believe it was Madea's Goes to Jail, was the most successful February in film history because of that movie.
February is usually a bleak time for films, too.
Right, it is. And so that movie, I think it was last year or the year before, that made that the most successful February up to that time. So his movies are very popular. They're not just good movies, but they're fun movies to go see. They're popular movies. And they always have a great theme. They deal with real characters. We're watching Christians have trouble with real life things like sex and drugs, with jail, police. I mean, anything you can think of that we would have trouble with that are regular people problems. We're not like, he actually says, look, Christians are regular people. Let's put them in regular situations and see what happens. Let's not put Christians up on a pedestal or make Christians put them up at the pulpit. That's the only place they can be. No, they're regular people. They're just like you and me. And they struggle with the same old things that anybody else does. And then let's throw in this big, fat, black guy, woman, guy dressed as a woman.
Who happens to be Tyler Perry.
Right. Yeah. It's just awesome. Awesomely funny. Medea's great. So anyway, I just, that is just, he's a wonderful director.
But you
director.
Were about to talk to about a different director before
different
I sidetracked
director.
You with
yes,
Tyler Perry.
But that was a good sidetrack because I had forgotten to include Tyler Perry, and he was brought to success in the last 10 years in film. So he was, I left him out by accident. Alex Proyas is the person I was going to talk about. His most recent film is called Knowing. He also did I, Robot, which was probably his more successful film. I think he did Dark City. I'm not positive about that. I'm pretty sure. And he did The Crow. All of these movies you can see Christian theme woven into it at various levels. But Knowing to me was a really obvious Christian film. But because there's these angels that are trying to save the human race from this destructive event that's going to occur. You know, the world's going to be destroyed and the angels are here to save the children. That's how I interpreted the film. There's this final scene where it looks like the kids are running to the Tree of Life after being delivered to a new planet. That's what it looks like. That's my interpretation. And I'm visiting my cousin in Prescott over the summer. Bring up this movie and he thinks that it has nothing to do. They're aliens. They're not angels. Totally opposite view of the movie than I had. And I thought it was really interesting because the movie doesn't spell it out. He wants you to ask questions. He's presenting ideas and it's up to you to figure it out. And I really like that about Alex Proyas. And that's one of the reasons I'd say Knowing is so good. It's not an in-your-face Christian theme movie, even though I came away thinking it was a Christian.
Well, we learn better what we figure out for ourselves, and it's just more artistic.
It's
to leave
more
a little
artistic
bit up in the air. Well, Mark, we're out of time, but we'll have you back really soon, though, for our Academy Awards show. We'll you want to do it before or after the awards?
Oh, we'll see.
well, before we can never resist making our predictions, and half the time they're wrong. So maybe
maybe we should do it.
Why
after
we do it afterwards to make our predictions? Then we'll see you next week, everybody.